Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Mystery and Magic of Life and Death teleconference series. I'm Dr. Michelle Petacolis, and tonight we are going to explore strategies for making our golden years shine. Tonight's guest is Tomas Pinkson. Tomas is a psychologist, ceremonial retreat and vision fast leader, sacred storyteller, and shaman. For 32 years, Tomas worked with terminally ill children at the Center for Attitudinal Healing in Marin, California, successfully integrating the wisdom of medicine teachers into the world of psychology. He's the founder of WACOM, a nonprofit organization committed to restoring the sacred in daily life. He lives in Northern California. He is currently writing a book, Fruitful Aging, about infusing spirit into elderhood. So, Tomas, welcome.
Thank you.
And I would like to begin by asking you about your 32 years at the Center for Attitudinal Healing. What was that all about? What were you doing? What did you learn?
Well, that evolved out of my work with helping start the first at-home hospice program in the United States. It was the second hospice program in the United States, but it was the first one for people where they were treated at their homes. And so I helped start hospice. And after a year of that work, I heard that there was a program literally about a few miles down the road that was starting that had a little more receptivity to what I was seeing in the patients that I was visiting through hospice, which was the role that an impact of their belief system in terms of their spirituality played on both the quality and sometimes the quantity of their lives. And the program starting just down the road was the Center for Attitudinal Healing.
So, and who started it?
Jerry Jampolsky is a psychiatrist who wrote a book called The Love is Letting Go of Fear.
And what was his background?
He was a pretty straight psychiatrist until he was he had a kind of a spiritual opening, and the Course of Miracles, I don't know if you're familiar with the Course of Miracles,
yes.
Became kind of like his pathway to spirit. And he wanted to start a group. He was seeing a few young children who had life-threatening illness in his private practice, and he began to wonder if some of the principles of Course in Miracles might be helpful to kids, but to introduce it in a non-denominational way. So he got some of these kids together in a group, and where the idea was that everybody would be an equal in terms of the fact, whatever your age or it was, or life's, you know, you were old or young or whatever, everybody had to deal with the reality that we're all going to die. None of us knows when, and we all have feelings and thoughts about that. And let's create a safe space where we can talk honestly about our feelings and thoughts about our mortality. And the kids going through similar situations, kind of in a peer support group, could support one another. And Jerry would play a kind of facilitative role in that, making it safe and opening up the space. And shortly after that started, a friend of mine who had cancer and was doing some work with Jerry invited me to come down and meet him and see what was going on, and I did. And Jerry invited me to join the children's group, which initially was very terrifying for me because I didn't know what to do. what would I have to say or do with kids with life-threatening illness?
Yeah, really. So what did you do?
Well, I asked Jerry about it, and he said, all you really have to do, Tom, is just love the kids. Just love them. That's all you have to do. And I thought to myself, well, that sounds nice and easy, but I think he's given me a crock here, and there's got to be more to it than that. But nevertheless, I went into the group, and I found out that day, and that's why I continued there for 32 years, like it says in somewhere in the Bible, and the children shall lead them. That these kids dealing with life-threatening illness were really powerful teachers in young bodies about the transformational power of love. And even though some of them died, there was great healing and great inspiration that came through the work. And actually many years later, having had many, many experiences with the children, their siblings, their parents, led me to write a small book called Do They Celebrate Christmas in Heaven, which an 8-year-old boy asked me the day before he died. And it's about spiritual rite of passage teachings from children with life-threatening illness that really, really share some of these powerful experiences I had with the children, who really taught me that it's not just pretty words, that the essence of our being is love. It's really true. And even while our bodies are going through traumatic experiences of treatment and amputation and this, that, and the other thing and dying, the presence of love can still be accessed and brought through in the situation to help people connect and get support in the most trying of challenges.
So here's my question.
Yeah.
About that. Did you notice any differences, and perhaps you didn't because that's who you were working with at the time, but now, in terms of working with elders, do you notice any difference in the way that elders or the people in their golden years deal with death and children deal with death?
Well, I think children are much more open. I mean, we all start off as completely open systems. And based on the family and culture we're born into, there's different amounts of closing off or shutting down. But the initial place is just this openness, this real openness,
mm-hmm.
and the access to feelings, to the heart, to love, to spirit is just it's just an open doorway. So
mm-hmm.
when we're older, you know, we've got some barnacles on our backs, you know, we've been through experiences, you know, might make us cynical or close us down or shut us down in despair, defeat, or anger, or who knows what. And so sometimes with the adults, you know, we gotta first deal with the barnacles.
Right. So that kind of goes on to my next question of how did you get into working with elders, or were you doing that simultaneously with working with the children at the
No, setting? Initially it was with the children and their families, adults also come to the center. There were support groups for the kids, but there was also a support group for adults, so I worked with adults. But I can't really recall any real elders, what I would call elders. Now I say people over 60s initially in those beginning years. But a funny thing happened to me over time. I noticed that I was growing older.
Uh-huh.
So when I hit 60, that my body was going through changes that said, you know, there's something significant happening here that you might want to pay attention to.
Indeed.
And so in paying attention to that, which involves really befriending the first of five what I call developmental steps and towards fruitful aging is befriending our mortality, creating
mm-hmm.
an ally relationship with our death. And so I stepped deeper into that. I'd been working through the experiences at the center with my mortality and befriending my death for quite a long time. But when I reached my 60s, it just dropped into a deeper level through the changes in my body, saying, you know, well, this is coming closer. This is you're entering the third stage of your life now, and where you're going to end up at the end of this stage is not where you ended up at any previous stages.
Indeed.
So it's kind of like what I'd call like a positive pressure, saying almost like the image of squeezing a sponge, saying like, what's in you that that wants to be expressed? It hasn't yet been expressed.
Interesting. I like your metaphor.
Hasn't been allowed to come out and do its dance, its song, literally or metaphorically, because this is it. This, if you don't do it in this stage of your life, it ain't going to happen, and you're going to go into your death, perhaps regretting that you never let this out, or you never nurtured this, or you never allowed it to be born and come alive into your life. So looking at that. And the very real challenges that can come with aging, I decided to start a group about how to age consciously, how to work consciously with the challenges of aging. So to not be naive that challenges, you know, the very real challenges happen on mental and physical level.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
With, 1 week, very interesting timing, 1 week after I started the group, about 15, 20 people, all really highly motivated to explore issues that related to aging consciously. I was celebrating, I don't know, what was my 60-something, early 60th birthday, and I was doing some skis touring up in the Sierra in a winter snowstorm, and so that was a strain on my back, but I was doing okay. When I returned from the mountains, there was a big load of firewood in our driveway that I'd ordered, a rainstorm coming in, nobody at home, I couldn't pull the car in. So I had to move the whole load of wood to the side, and I did it very carefully and very consciously. But nevertheless, my back seized up, and I just fell to the ground in pain.
Wow.
I crawled into the house, and that had happened once every 5 years or so, something like that would happen, not as severe, and I knew, well, I just got to rest for a day or two, and I'll be okay. Well, the next day there wasn't any release, and so I made it with difficulty to a physical therapist who did some traction work with me, which felt wonderful. And I got up and I said, oh my God, this is wonderful freedom. And I thanked him and started walking to the door, and then all of a sudden this searing lightning bolt of pain just ripped through my body, and I fell to this floor screaming in agony.
Wow.
And had to be whisked to the emergency room, fortunately a hospital quite close. And that kind of was a doorway into a period of time where for almost 2 months I was flat on my back.
Wow.
Couldn't walk. I'd herniated one disc. Another disc was bulging and causing sciatica. So it was just agonizing pain. And during that time, I'd have to I couldn't sit up, so I had to eat lying on my back. If I had to go to the bathroom, I'd have to crawl there, and then I couldn't actually sit on the toilet. I'd have to hold myself up with my arms because any pressure on the spine would just send spasms.
Be painful, yeah.
Yeah, so it was quite a challenging situation that went on for this almost 2 months, during which time I was totally dependent on other people to help me meet my needs. Just totally...
Oof.
So,
what an introduction into aging.
Well, it was very interesting because it was like the indigenous spirituality is there's the figure of the trickster, sometimes as the coyote or the raven, and
right.
It was like I could see the trickster saying, "Okay, you want to learn about conscious aging? We're gonna kind of like pick you up by the collar and bring you forward in time another 20 years or 30 years or something, to where you could be actually experiencing this, and see what it's like to be in severe pain, to be incapacitated, to be totally dependent on others, to be on medication, all kinds of medication." This is like it's a preview of the kinds of
and
things.
And useless, too, because you're stuck in bed. You, like, can't do anything.
Exactly. Having to face all my fears and anxieties. Will I ever walk again? Will I not be able to walk again and do all the things I love to do? Will I be the rest of my life in pain, dependent, feeling useless, feeling impotent, feeling powerless? All of these things is what I had to deal with.
Right.
And so I saw this is the coyote giving me an opportunity to be not in theoretically dealing with these kinds of situations, these challenges, but right in them. And
to understand it from the inside out.
Exactly. And to have the opportunity to work, to pick the different tools out of my tool bag, so to speak, spiritual, mental, cognitive, emotional tools out of the tool bag that I had accumulated over all these years. And under the fire of these challenges, try them out. See what worked, what didn't work.
And what did you discover? We're going to get to that, aren't you? I mean, that's in your book, I guess, how people can deal with that.
That's in the book. It was a gift of grace that as in the midst of the pain, the searing pain, there was a voice that said, that I could hear, an internal voice that said, there's a wisdom available to you that knows how to heal. There's the wisdom within you that knows how to heal. And your job is to open to that wisdom and listen to it in all the different ways it can come to you and let go of your time schedule. Because I wanted to be better in a week. I figured
yes,
out.
Yes, don't we? Isn't that like for most of us, that's it? Like we give it a week and after that it's like, I'm done.
Yeah, that's enough of that. Let's get the hell out of here. So the it was real clear that no, this is... there is the wisdom available that knows how to heal, but you're going to have to surrender into it and let go of your time schedules. It's going to take whatever time it needs, just like when you put seeds in the earth, you know, after a few days and you don't see anything, you can't reach in there and, like, try to pull it out.
Right.
So
yeah. No, you got to wait.
It was a huge testing and teaching about surrendering into with faith and trust and opening with receptivity and attention to all the different things that came up internally, as well as helping friends and family, offering this, that, and the other kind of intervention to see what worked and what didn't work.
That is fantastic. What an incredible teaching lesson. I want to talk to you more about your book and about the lessons of aging. But before we get to that, I had a few other questions that I wanted to ask you. And you describe yourself as a shaman. How did you become a shaman, and what does it mean to be a shaman?
Well, it's a good question. It certainly wasn't something a kid from the Bronx in New York started out on as a career path. I actually started dealing with mortality shortly before my fourth birthday. I had a dramatic introduction, excuse me, to what the Buddhists call the teachings of impermanence when my father died a few months
my
fourth birthday.
Oh my goodness! How did he die?
He had rheumatic fever when he was a boy. His heart was damaged, and he had been in the war and got sick never fully recovered. So the time that I remember him, the few memories were, he was dealing with illness of one sort or another, and eventually it reached a critical mass, so to speak, that just hemorrhaged in his brain, and he died.
Wow.
And it took me, it plunged me into, because in the late 40s there wasn't any understanding about how to work with a young person in grief.
Right, you were supposed to keep it quiet, and maybe they wouldn't notice that somebody was missing, right?
Yeah, so all of
Or pretend that nothing happened.
Yeah. So what happened to all that energy? Well, it imploded, and I got life-threatening illness myself of severe asthma and went through that for a number of years. And then when I was a teenager, the all that energy that it imploded when testosterone started fueling the system, it came out as an explosion of anger from the hurt, the unresolved grief and hurt and sadness,
right,
toward the world. Well, the injustice of what had happened to poor me, and now I was going to take it out on the world, and I did so through drug abuse and juvenile delinquency and being in a gang and being all kinds of acting out behavior that I was, God's grace, I survived through that, and here I am to tell the story. But my dad's death, I really plunged me into an existential question. I couldn't formulate it that at 4 years old, but it's looking back, that's what happened. And the question was, given this reality we're living in, where this thing we call death can come at any time and take people we love and doesn't need our okay, it can just do mm-hmm. whatever it wants. Given that reality that I have no ability to deny because it happened.
Right.
Given that reality, what, if anything, is worth-based living a life on? That was
right.
The question that was in me. And so in looking around as I grew older in the 50s, the level of conformity to the middle-class mores and to which I saw so much hypocrisy in wherever I looked, I didn't see authenticity, and I didn't see a whole lot of integrity, and I didn't see a lot of soulfulness of people living meaningful lives. I saw just the opposite. And so in my teenage years and as a young adult, I began to gravitate toward subcultures where there was a more intimate connection with an expression of what's real in life and authenticity.
Mm-hmm,
and eventually that led me to indigenous people, where I found that.
And what indigenous people did you find?
Well, by then I was living in, initially I found it doing construction work on the East Coast when I was a teenager, where I was one of the few white guys on the job. I was mostly working with Afro-American men from
uh-huh.
Washington, D.C. and Virginia. And
uh-huh.
They kind of put me through their test, you might say. When I passed the test, I was kind of like allowed into their comradeship of brothers, of being real about life.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my very different than what I was experiencing at school or mainstream society and culture. So there was vitality, there was life, there was people being real about death, about life, about sex, about things that were real.
Wow.
The opposite of what I was experiencing in, if you will, straight society. When I barely made it through high school because I barely went to it. But my plan all along was when I got out of high school, then I'm going to go to junior college, get away from here. Nobody knows me. I can start over. And I'll go to school because I'm choosing it, and I'm going to take subjects I want to take, which was mainly to try to understand why I had been behaving in such destructive ways. But I, in applying myself in that way and trying to get to a place where someday maybe I can try to help young people who had been going through things such as I had been going through, because the people who were ostensibly helpers to me during that time weren't really doing it. I felt they were just being forced into a box and trying to conform and squash my spirit. And that didn't feel right. Just says, no, right. I'm not going to go there. So when I came out to Southern California to go to junior college, I found similarly what I'd found in the Afro-American subculture in the Chicano culture,
mm-hmm.
Southern California. Again, oppressed people who racism was oppressing and prejudice and discrimination was holding down, but they were still had connection with their indigenous roots.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an expression of authenticity and integrity and realness, and not phoniness. And
mm-hmm.
so that was like water to a thirsty man to me. And eventually that led me to, when I got a couple of degrees, I did apply myself in school and did well and got some degrees. And eventually, in I think 1970, helped start a drug program for many, many young people were coming back from Vietnam addicted to heroin because of what happened there in Vietnam. So there was a huge epidemic of heroin usage, and in starting this drug program to help address it, I eventually developed a wilderness program, taking the addicts out into the mountains of the Sierra, and the mountain climbing and the rock climbing and wilderness survival and river running and snow camping, all those kinds of things, to as part of the treatment modality, because that nothing talk therapy wasn't working.
Right.
And this was very powerful for me. And one of the things we did in the program was to have to do some mountain climbing, and then at the end of that, have a period of solitude without any food, being on your own in the wilderness. And I'd never done that, so before we asked people in the program to do it, then I did it, and it was a tremendously powerful experience for me, very self-confrontational and very empowering. And as I was driving home from that experience, I walked by a bookstore at one point. I stopped for a break on the way home, and this book kind of jumped out of the bookstall, and it was about a Native American man named Lame Deer. And the first page, he was talking about his experience as a young person in the wilderness fasting.
Wow.
And why was he doing it? Because his whole culture believed that we're not here by accident. We have a purpose in being here. Every human being has a purpose in being here. The Great Spirit, the Creator, the Goddess, whatever you want to call it, the creative intelligence of the universe, gives us the breath of life. And in my case, certainly protected me, actually, all of us alive, all the gifts of protection in our lives, or we wouldn't be here. So I could open up and learn what I really needed to learn. And this culture, the Native American culture that this man was in, recognized that at the time of adolescence, there's a need for a rite of passage when that testosterone hits. That male needs to learn, especially the male, needs to learn how to use that power in a way that helps society instead of hurts it, like I'd been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they prepare them for an experience of solitude and isolation, fasting in the mountains. They call it a vision quest.
Okay.
So I had never heard that term before. I didn't know about this rite of passage for Native American people, but I was just said, yeah, this is exactly what he's talking about, exactly what I just went through, and how helpful it was for me to go through that experience. So it raised a question in my mind. Well, I wonder what other rites of passage or ways these cultures have that help people through times of transition and challenge in ways that my culture is clueless about.
Right.
So that said, okay, I need to learn more about Native American spirituality. And I just started kind of putting that out into the field, and eventually was led to a Native American man who was an art teacher at a junior college, and I started talking with him, and he became my first teacher. He was a Pacific Northwest coast man, And he slowly started to put me through a lot of tests, but gradually he started to teach me about Native American spirituality, and eventually he kind of lifted what he called the buckskin curtain and brought me to a ceremony where I met a medicine man or a spirit elder, an elder that works with the spirits, i.e. a medicine man. And some shamans in cultures around the world are people who have had, usually such as I did with a life-threatening illness, some kind of crisis in their life that really knocked them down, and they didn't. It was a crisis that there was no guarantee they were going to live, but they had this—they had the soul strength to survive it and come back up from that hole, and so they knew from experience what they'd created an ally relationship with their own mortality that empowered them in their living and opened them up to a wider bandwidth of consciousness, i.e., the connection with the world of spirit, the transpersonal consciousness. And so the shaman is the person who has a predilection for that kind of experience and comes back with the ability to, you might say, go through a doorway into the spirit world, journey into it, and bring back information that can be helpful to the people of their tribe for healing, for finding game, for challenges they're facing, getting wisdom guidance from a higher connection, you might say. So that's how I got involved with Native American spirituality, and eventually that took me to Mexico, where I met a group of people who called the Huichols, in their language the Wixárika, who still follow their shamanic roots going back all the way into the Paleolithic, you know, back to the very beginning of what we now know ourselves to be as humans. That line from generation to the next had not been broken by conquest, because the Huichols lived far up in the Sierra Madre in Mexico. So the conquistadores, when they came from Spain and invaded and started killing the Indians for practicing their religion, the Huichols escaped the brunt of that, and so was able to be continued on from one generation and still alive. And I was fortunate to be a doorway open for me to get involved with the Huichols, which led to an 11-year apprenticeship with Huichol shamans, concluding with a graduation or completion ceremony in the village 11 years later. That when I completed the test, I came out the other side and got a degree in what our culture would call shamanism.
Wow. Okay. So, and how do you work with that degree? I mean, how do you help people with your shamanistic background or shaman studies? How is that useful?
Well, the interesting, or one of many interesting things about it, is the lessons that I was learning through the shamanic experience and through the vision quests was pretty much the same lesson I was working with children with life-threatening illness.
Interesting.
Different.
Full circle.
Yeah. It was pretty much the same thing, that the essence of our being is not our physical bodies. The essence of our being is not our egos or our ego stories or identity of who we are as Tom Pinkson or whatever. We're not separate things. We're not separate from the earth. We're not separate from our ancestors. We're not separate from each other. We're not separate from the ocean, the sky, the wind, the mountain, the tree. That we're all connected. We're all connected on the deepest levels of our being, and the essence of our being, of who and what we are, is a luminous energy that in our culture we would call love, infinite, unconditional love, in which we're all joined. And the child with life-threatening illness that I was working with helped me to open to that and see that under the most trying of circumstances, this not as a nice idea, but as an experiential reality, which was the same opening to what I was seeing through my visionary experiences with the Huichols.
Wow. And were you doing the studying with the Huichols simultaneously with, or not exactly in the same moment, but while you were also at the Center for Attitudinal Healing? Was that the same time period?
Yes, it was, yeah. And
okay.
It was also within the context of being married and raising children. So to balance all of this was a huge challenge. And
I
could only get away for, you know, two, three weeks once a year to go down to Mexico to be with the Huichols. But then the shaman would give me assignments that I'd have to work on during the year, which they would kind of watch me in a telepathic way, you might say. And when I came back the next time, let me know what they saw and what the next assignment was.
Wow.
So it was a challenging balancing act going down there and integrating or trying to integrate what I experienced there back here in family life and work life. But it Go ahead.
Well, there might be quite a challenge to balance those two realities because they must be have been very, very different.
Yeah, and what's interesting, Michelle, is one of my favorite quotes is from the mystic Meister Eckhart, who was, I think, in the 11th century. And he said, it's not about doing holy things. It's about making what you do holy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that. And that's really what the integration process is from the shamanic world, the indigenous spirituality and vision quest world, and the working with children and adults with life-threatening illness is really all about. It's opening to that awareness.
That's great. That's great. So once you start to see everything as holy, then the integration becomes a lot easier.
It's from the Native American perspective, they would say spirit, we would say maybe consciousness, is present in everything.
Everything, yeah.
Without a differentiation between, well, that's a living thing, that flower is a living thing, that rock's not, it's inanimate. No, in their understanding, and it's really a very similar understanding of what quantum physics is telling us today about the deepest levels of reality,
right.
That energy, i.e. consciousness, is in everything because everything is energy.
Right. That's
so
great.
So when you open up to that and you realize that's so and how there's no such thing as a separate thing, we're all interpenetrating energy fields vibrating in different rates, you might say, but we're all part of this larger wholeness or oneness, then you begin to realize that what I say or do to someone else or to the earth or an animal, I'm also doing to myself. I'm also doing to my my grandchildren.
Right.
So it begins to change how we go about the daily acts of our lives. It really brings
big
us
time.
Down to recognizing, you know, everything is about relationship. There's nothing you can think of that's not about relationship.
Wow, that's
and
great.
And then with that recognition comes another question. Okay, it's kind of a confrontational question. It says, okay, how do you want to create relationship with, and then you fill in whatever it is. The challenge.
And so, the next question is has to do with aging. And,
yeah.
You know, what we have right now is our contemporary culture that has a specific take on aging, which is aging is really not something you want to do, and you should fight it as much as you can, and you get facelifts and dye your hair and you know, work out at the gym so that you don't look old. And what does that leave us, or what are all our alternatives?
Yeah, we have, as you say, we have this ageist culture and this glorification of youth, and which is the opposite of indigenous cultures, where the elders are revered and respected and utilized in a socially integrative way. So my experience in being with the Huichol and other indigenous groups around the world, because over a course of 40 years of doing the Vision Quest, I traveled around the world, and I would always go into these indigenous cultures and try to spend time with the elders. And so I saw consistently in these other cultures that the elders were really respected and used in ways to pass on the life teachings to the next generation, the opposite of what we do here. In our culture, that was also a stimulus for starting a conscious aging group. We've got to try to do something here to address this ageist attitude we have, and try to create more of what I experience in indigenous cultures, where there's a valuation and recognition of the importance of elders and how to use that wisdom they've acquired, if they've been paying attention in their life, in a way that benefits everybody.
And so, how successful are you at getting people who are elders to accept that new perspective about themselves? Or how do you get them to shift instead of seeing themselves as sort of discards?
Well, one that I talk about in my book, Fruitful Aging, the subtitle of which is Finding the Gold in the Golden Years, I developed out of my own experiences with my injury and what I found that worked and didn't work and how it had really plunged me into this kind of spiritual, metaphysical crisis and exploration. Out of that came a program I call the Recognition Rites. Recognition Rites, Honoring Elders. And It's a program where I take people through a process, and the book talks about the process, so it doesn't have to just be limited to me doing it, because obviously that has limitations.
Yeah.
But helping people look at what I saw as I looked at my own experience, five developmental tasks towards fruitful aging, that if these five developmental tasks were done, worked with in a skillful way, that would lead to an experience of aging fruitfully and a blossoming of our fullest potentials, the deepest potentials of which we have our creative spiritual intelligence. So the five tasks were, number one I mentioned was befriending your mortality and creating an ally relationship with life. So instead of being fearful or anxious and constricted about death, we've created a relationship by facing it, working with it, that juices us in our living. And I don't think actually my experience, people really come into full, soulful, heartfelt living of who and what they really are from the deepest depths until and if they face their mortality.
Right.
So that's the first developmental task. And the second one is, okay, so let's taking people through a process of where we go back and review their life experiences, both what their ego at the time thought was positive and what their ego might have evaluated as negative or a failure or shameful, but to go back and look at their lives, all the experiences, and what did you learn from those experiences as you go back and look at? What teachings did they have for you that now in your older years you can see, you couldn't see then? What did you learn about that's real, that has meaning, that speaks to your soul? What are those teachings? What are those lessons? So the review process is to kind of fly back into your past, you might say, to harvest, to pick up those teachings, to not leave them lying there, but pick them up and put them in your bag and bring them back here into your present life. So that's the second step, the harvesting, the review and harvesting of the wisdom teachings of your life. And interwoven with that, you can't do that process without becoming aware of relationships or situations from the past that, if they're there, and for most of us as human beings, they are there, where they hadn't been completely resolved, or there was still hurt there, there's still constricted energy around it in some way, shame, anger, hurt, whatever.
So there's some healing that might go on during
that. The doorway for that to take place opens, because the process asks you, first of it acknowledges that this experience that happened when you were five or six, where something horrible happened to you. Number one, you didn't deserve it. And it wasn't about you. It was about whatever the wounds are of the person who abused you or incested you or whatever it was. It was their wounds that led them to do that behavior. It's not something that was bad about you. You're not at fault there. And we can't change, just like with my father's death. I couldn't change. I had no power to change the fact that he died before I was 4 years old, and it plunged me into what I went through that I talked about earlier. But what I can do is I can take a look at the relationship I have to my father's death. And if the relationship that I created with my father's death, or whatever it was, is one that constricts me or embitters me or shuts me down in my life, closes my heart, I have the power to change that relationship. That I can do.
Right.
And so that's a significant part of helping the person in the harvest step look at the relationship and take a look at the relationship they have with the event that happened.
Right.
Opening the door to healing, if that's the direction they want to go. There's nothing to say you have to do that. It's up to the person's choice, but they get to make a conscious choice about it, which leads into the third step of developmental step toward fruitful aging is, and it comes from indigenous spirituality, at least that's how it came to me, the notion that you're not here by accident. You weren't created at Walmart or something. You were created by the creative powers of the universe that are powerful enough that if they didn't want you here, you wouldn't be here. So the very fact that you're here, created by sacred powers that we have all different kinds of names for, you are a sacred being. You are a sacred being. You are a worthy being. You're worthy of respect, of care, of tenderness, of celebration. You are a being of light at the center of who and really what you are underneath your bones and skin and persona and ego and all of that. You get down to the very center of your being. And even in Latin, what's our center called? It's the solar plexus, the place of light. We are vibrating energy, magnetic wave fields of light, and that light's at the center of our being. We're sacred, worthy, luminous beings, and we're not here by accident. That spirit, that creative power of the universe that gives us life, sustains us life, it gave each of us as human beings certain gifts, certain sensitivities, certain abilities that if we discover them, and we nurture them, and we help them grow to fullest potential, those gifts are what are going to create the greatest meaning in our lives when we find ways to, like Native American people say, to give back, to share with others. And that's your purpose in being here, to bring those, to find what your gifts are, your talents, bring them to the highest fruition that you can, and to share them, to give them away with others, to find your purpose in being here, your vision. Your meaningful vision and purpose in being here. That's the third step. So it's kind of like a vision quest without having to go out into the outer wilderness, as I'd been doing when I was younger. It's going into the inner wilderness.
Inner wilderness.
So the fourth step is after you've gone through processes that I talk about in the book to help you get in touch with your sense of meaningful purpose and being, is, okay, well, now we have to access our creativity, our generativity, and our courage to bring it out in the world. It's one thing to have a vision, but it's another thing to bring it into living.
To manifest it, to make it material.
That takes courage,
because
we're going to be stepping out of the comfort zone.
Absolutely.
In my 60s, I had a very interesting example of this. Let me just check with you. I see by my watch here, it's like 12 or 13 after 6.
Yeah.
What time do we need to end?
We end, or theoretically, at 6:30, but at quarter after, I want to open the lines up for questions.
Yeah, which is just a minute or two. So.
Yeah,
okay.
So maybe you could sort of summarize that. And then if people don't chime in, then you just keep on continuing.
Yeah.
You know, people don't always ask.
Okay, well, being older, you're going to have to remind me what I was just speaking about to finish up.
Well, you were just about to talk about accessing your creativity and generative courage.
Okay.
You were just starting to talk about that.
Yeah, well, let me just skip over to the last one then, which is once you've done that, access and the courage to act on your vision, then the next step is really what is referred to by a social scientist as gerotranscendence, nurturing the natural drive inside of us as we get older to go inside and develop our spirituality and grow our spirituality for the fullest blossoming, the fruitful aging.
Say that again. How do you do that?
He postulates that there's a natural drive in us that he terms, it's a new term called gerotranscendence. That when our other needs are met, beyond Erickson's eighth stage of generativity, he's postulating another stage, gerotranscendence. That there's a natural call inward that could be overridden, and our culture doesn't support it, so for most of us it's overridden. But if we're nurturing, if we're listening, and have an intentionality to age consciously, it's a call inward to listen to deeper voice, deeper vision, deeper feelings, deeper intuition, deeper guidance. And really what the essence of that is connecting with our soul, connecting with the essence of our being, which isn't physical, it's spirit. And so our highest potential for intelligence, for creativity, is through our spiritual being, connecting with the spiritual truth of who we are.
And does that provide us with the courage to manifest or embody our mission and purpose?
Well, through exploring whatever your spiritual beliefs are, just the very concept of spiritual means or refers to there's more to reality than us. There's bigger powers present here.
Right.
So exploring our spirituality, we get to look at what kind of relationship do I have to whatever I, in my beliefs, consider, my experience tells me, is bigger than me, like death.
Uh-huh.
Like the mysterious workings of what happens with life. So what kind of relationship do I have with that? And how can I deepen, strengthen, attune my relationship with those powers that are bigger than me, i.e. God, spirit, nature, the Tao, whatever you want to call it. And so it's through the exploration of how to do that that we can call on those bigger powers rather than just our own ego resources for strength, for courage, for help, for guidance.
Okay.
I don't have to do this on my own.
You don't have to do it. I see.
I don't have to do it on my own because the very notion of aloneness, of separation, is an illusion, that perception.
Right. Right. Okay.
So, yeah, I don't have to do this. I don't have to worry about what am I going to say when Michelle asks me questions. I'm doing Spirit's work here. I'm just trying to be a channel for whatever comes through me, trust
whatever
it.
Whatever comes through you.
And I don't have to worry
so
about it.
That takes away the fear.
Yeah. So it's not Tom Pink's has got to come up with brilliant answers. Oh, my God.
Right, right. That's great. Well, we are more than 15 minutes past. I want to open up the line for questioning. I know that there was one more step to this, and we can continue on, but I want to open up. So, I want to tell everybody out there, if you hit *6, it will put your hand up. If you have questions for Tomas, please put your hands up, and I will recognize you and unmute you. So until somebody does that or figures out how to hit that keypad, let's go to the last step, which is realizing your highest potential. Or is that also part of what you were just talking about?
Yeah.
The
maturation, the fullest blossoming of who and really what we are is our spiritual maturation, the spiritual intelligence and creativity of the truth, essence of who we are at the deepest level of our being.
Okay. All right. Because I guess when I had first heard these titles, I was thinking, oh, okay, so here you are in your golden years, you know, you're slowing down and everything, and now you got to go and do everything that you didn't get done beforehand because, whoops, guess what, you've got your mission and purpose and you're running out of time and you better go and fulfill your purpose. But that's sort of a very goal-oriented concept, which doesn't necessarily, I mean, it isn't, doesn't coincide with what spirit's about necessarily.
And actually, the deepest purpose of our being, since the essence of our being is love, our love is forgiving. We don't have to go out and do anything, physical action, to do that. All we have to do is breathe down into our heart with intention and awareness. Our heart opens and to send the love out into the world. We can be on our deathbed in our last breath doing that. We can be incapacitated like I was for the 2 months. And we can do that work. And that's from our being. It's not a doing and an action. It just flows out of our being. So as our physical bodies, we lose ability to do this, things. I can't do the things, the mountain climbing that I did in my, even my 40s. I can't do this anymore. I used to be a long-distance marathon runner. I can't do that anymore. So part of the challenge with aging is accepting the losses, going through the feelings that whatever those are, honoring those feelings with the grief and loss. But also through the spiritual work, it's shifting the identity focus, you might say, from who I am as my ego and body to the deepest part of who I am is not that, is part of the oneness, is part of the infinite spirit. So as I lose, I can't do this anymore, and if I just think I'm my body and what it's able to do, then I'm in a lot of trouble. But if I've done spiritual work to realize, not just as a thought, but experientially, that I'm part of the deepest part of me is integral and one with infinite being, infinite energy, infinite spirit, infinite life.
So it's really connecting to that. And so this is actually a process also of preparing for that passageway out over to the other side,
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm going to remind everybody out there, if anybody has any questions, please press *6, and I will see your hand, and I will unmute you, and you can ask a question.
Yeah, let me just real briefly give my website and email,
yes,
which is Dr. Tom Pinkson, PINKSON.com. And so you can, if people want to find out more about my books or actually a CD that was part of my blossoming in my 60s of songs that I wrote or wrote through me that I recorded, each of which has a teaching, which is totally out of my comfort zone.
I dare say that would be, yes.
Yeah, they can contact me or find out more about that through my website.
Thank you. That's great. I do have a question here. It's I'm going to unmute you. It's area code 503. Hello, caller?
Yes, this is Mary Jo Saavedra, and thank you for taking my question. It's actually a logistics question here. I was added on late. I had a client meeting, and I'm so disappointed because I missed a good portion of the conversation. And I'm wondering if it's being recorded so that we can back and listen to it.
You bet. It is being recorded, and as soon as I get the link for it, I'll be sending out the link to probably tomorrow to all the people who have registered for the event. If you haven't registered for it, then just send me an email and say, "Oh, I want to get the recording."
Yes.
So anybody who has been signed up and will get the link, and anybody who emails me will get the link.
Will I be on that list to get an email from you about how to sign up?
I'll make sure that you get the information to you.
Thank you.
And not only can you hear it on the website, but you can download it as well and look over on the left-hand side of the screen at the bottom, and you'll see the link there.
Great.
Any other questions?
So much.
Okay.
No,
well,
that was my main concern because I did sign on so late. So
that's okay.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks for listening.
And Sorry about that. A little fast. And we have another caller, and
okay.
This is listed as Patricia. Patricia, is that you?
Yes. Hi. Thank you. Tom, I just finished reading your book, The Shamanic Wisdom of the Huichol, and I just loved it. Qué bueno. Gracias.
Gracias.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you, I'm 58, and I'm really struggling with, I guess Jean Houston would call it that generalized affection for all, loving the trees and nature and getting more in touch with all, and yet also feeling increased grief and loss about the devastation of our planet.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering what you think the elders in the Huichol community would say, since they've lost the deer populations, their sacred deer, and their sacred lands are being destroyed. What would they say for how to cope with that sense of grief and loss?
Well, my spiritual grandmother, Guadalupe, was one of the primary shamans that I was closest with many, many years ago before I'd ever heard the term global warming. She said, you know, Father Sun is coming closer to the earth to purify. Why is that happening? Because but she said that people in El Norte, in the north, have forgotten how to live. Forgotten how to live respectfully with the spirit of the earth, with the spirit of nature. And so the sun's coming closer to help us wake up. And so part of her assignment to me when I completed with the Huichols was to come back to the north and share what I had learned, that I had a responsibility to do that. That it's all alive. The earth is alive. So we feel the pain more when we know it's alive. When we know that mountain or that river or that tree is alive, and we see what's happening to it. And the challenge is, and the Huichol's teachers help me with that, as well as the children with life-threatening illnesses, is connect to do what works for you to connect to spirit, to the bigger power, to the bigger intelligence. And ask it, what is it I can do with the time I'm alive to help bring more consciousness back to how we're all connected, to bring more love through? What is it that I can do? And every thought I have, so we're conditioned in our culture to really into a disempowered state. Oh, I'm just one person, you know, or I'm an older person, or I'm frail, or I'm not a president of something, or army general, or head of a corporate. I'm just one. The reality is precisely because we are all connected, every thought I have is an energy which triggers a feeling that goes out into the larger field. So it brings me to a place that I have to take more responsibility, be more vigilant. If I want like peace in the world, peace with justice in the world, less violence, I need to be more attendant to the violence inside myself and to heal that. So the energy that comes out from me is peaceful energy. We need, like Gandhi said, to be the change we want to see in the world. and use what works for you in your belief system to connect with that larger power to give you the courage and the support when the media is so full of everything that's not working. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you so much, Tomas.
Yeah, thank you.
Do you have any other questions, Patricia?
I have many, but not enough time, so thank you so much.
Okay,
well, thank you so much for putting up your hand. And if you have another one, raise your hand again. So I wanted to remind people that there's still time to ask Tomas questions, and just to raise your hand, press star 6 on your telephone keypad. Okay, so where does that leave us? I think that we've figured out that the real purpose of those golden years is to prepare ourselves for our final passage and to get in touch with our connection to all that is and the divine, and maybe even still do things, as you say, like orient our minds in alignment with what is healing and powerful for the world.
And make a difference up to our last breath. We are empowered, and I think it's incumbent on us as elders. I'm just working in my private practice with an older couple today that are dealing with life-threatening illness, that how it's incumbent on us as elders, because we're not in the rat race anymore, either because of age or illness or incapacity or whatever, and we've been slowed down by all of those factors, to really come into deeper being and connection with spirit and be a channel for more healing light and love into the world, into the field. And the more of us that are doing that more consistently in our daily lives, it's helping to reach a critical mass where the whole paradigm shifts, just like the Berlin Wall came down without any violence. The whole paradigm, instead of an anti-life paradigm, living our life on materialistic greed, we can create a win-win world for all of life, a sustainable, healthy, win-win world. And as elders, caring about next generations and passing on the wisdom teachers of our lives in whatever way our creativity guides us to, but from our being, no matter incapacitated body, ill, whatever, we always have the potential, if we're alive and aware, to open ourselves to the breath consciously, open our hearts to the love in our hearts that we didn't create, like the breath, and send it out into the world. Our family, friends, loved ones, the people who will push our buttons, to the places in the planet that are hurting, to the Middle East, to wherever it needs to go.
That's great. It's almost like in your elder years, you can kind of be your own sort of monk. You know, there were those times where there were in the past where they had monasteries where people spent a lot of time in contemplation, and it was really the purpose was to send out good blessings to the world.
And address address the real challenges. Stand up against injustice. Stand up against sexism. You know, the violence done to women, the violence done to children, the violence done to plants and animals. The violence to stand up and say, no, this is not okay. And we have to live the alternative to that. We have to bring through the alternative to that in win-win relationships to create a world that works for everyone.
Right. So we have just, we have a minute left, although we could take a little bit longer, but is there anything that you haven't said yet that you want to bring up? I didn't know about the book that you had written about the Weechals. Maybe you can say the name of that again if there are people who are interested in that. Maybe spell it, because it doesn't spell the way it sounds.
Shamanic, the name of the book is The Shamanic Wisdom of the Huichol, Huichol. And the subtitle is Medicine Teachings for Modern Times. And medicine in indigenous spirituality refers to spirit. So Medicine Teachings for Modern Times. And the CD that I has 15 songs on it, each of them a progression from dealing with frustration and anger and despair to coming into the light and coming into the presence of love at the center of our being, is called Jumping Into the Real, Songs for the Soul. And it's got a picture of myself and my three grandsons jumping off kind of a bridge into the water in Hawaii. It's a great picture.
Oh, That's great. And are these available on your website, or are they available on Amazon? How can people get a hold of this?
The Shamanic Wisdom and this is available through Amazon. CD Baby has the songs, the Jumping Into the Real, and the book, the Fruitful Aging book, doesn't have a publisher yet. If anybody out there has contacts for publishers, let me know. My email is tompinkson@gmail.com. And the book, Do They Celebrate Christmas in Heaven, was self-published. And if people want to receive a copy of that, I have some left. I had a small grant to print up copies to give away to places and people working with people in life-threatening situations. Send me a self-addressed, like mailing envelope, 9x12 or something, to my address, 710 C Street, number 211 in San Rafael, California, 94901, and I would be glad to send you a free copy of that book as long as I have copies.
Well, that's very generous of you. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for a very, very interesting presentation and dialogue about the work that you're doing. I'm looking forward to reading your book. When do you think you might have it out?
Well, I've got a board meeting I've got to go to right now, and then I'm going to go home.
You do. And then you're going to go home and write.
Hopefully I'm right on the final editing, and then I'm going to get a professional editor to go through it, and then
right.
I start looking for a publisher.
Excellent. Wow, so it's really close.
Oh yeah.
Well, I'm not going to keep you on any longer because I do know that you have to run off. You do have a very busy schedule. You are certainly living the talk in terms of trying to make the most of your golden years.
I'm trying.
Good luck and have a great evening, and until next time, take care.